evening. This is Justin Ford for From the Frontline. Tonight we're dealing with how cancel culture aims to cancel Christianity. In the studio with me is Dr. Peter Hammond, the founder of Frontline Fellowship, who has been involved in serving persecuted Christians for over 40 years in 38 countries. Dr. Hammond, some bizarre things are happening in our society throughout the Western world. Are we imagining it, or is the cancel culture movement expanding its reach to target Christianity?
Yes, I would say cancel culture aims to cancel Christianity, and their goal seems to be to consign Christians to the gulag of irrelevance. At the heart of this campaign is actually a Marxist-inspired strategy that is utilizing a network of Hollywood propaganda, masked as entertainment, media disinformation campaigns from Slime Magazine, Useless News and World Report, Newspeak, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network and so on, Sunday Crimes, and then a whole series of complex laws, public policies and government mandates, and targeted litigation. The aim of all which is clearly to throw believers under the bus of this woke steamroller and to be consigned into the woke gulag, effectively confined to the closet. While the perverts are coming out of the closet, we are to be confined to the closet within the four walls of the church alone, not allowed to have any Christian influence in society as a whole. Their goal is to eradicate Christian influence in society and vaporize or deplatform the foundational truths of the Bible. If successful, this communist-inspired cancel culture movement will deprive Christians of their jobs, parental rights, maybe even their children, and any significant role in directing the country's future.
By what means can this cancel culture campaign attempt to cancel Christianity?
Well, it's essential that we recognize the subtle and not so subtle Soviet strategies employed to undermine Christianity. The Bible warns us to not be unaware of Satan's schemes. In 2 Corinthians 2, we're told, do not be unaware of Satan's schemes. Well, I think most Christians are very unaware. Cancel culture at its core revolves around a collective communist effort to shame and ostracize and demonize and penalize individuals based on their Christian convictions, cultural habits, beliefs, or expressions. And these Christian and conservative beliefs and practices are often being deemed racist, homophobic, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic, hostile, sexist, nationalistic, hateful, or bigoted. And these categories are even subject to very broad, ever-evolving definitions. And you can just consider the progression of the cancel culture movement. It used to be that accusations of homophobia were thrown against people who disapproved of homosexual acts. Now, if you criticize those opposed to the radical transgender cult, if you oppose castration of boys, mastectomies for girls, and other genital mutilation, and sterilizing youngsters, and in other ways butchering children to change their sex, if you oppose that, you're now a homophobic bigot. So, at one time, racism was opposed. For example, if you used crude racial slurs or were treating other people badly, that's just called racism. Now, just purchasing an Aunt Jemima syrup is called racism. And it used to be that to oppose white supremacy was trying to shut down Ku Klux Klan groups or marches. Now, opposing white supremacy is evidence in shutting down music classes because music is racist and it causes significant institutional violence. You know, Bach and Handel and Beethoven is racist. Punctuality has now been branded racist. Love for your pets is considered and condemned racist. And Berliners who opposed the kidnapping of their cats and dogs by foreign migrants who cooked and ate them, they've been condemned as Nazis. Apparently, love for your pets and opposition to people taking your pets and cooking and eating them and skinning them is now Nazi.
Dr. Hammond, perhaps you can give us some examples of how this actually works in practice.
Well, yes, there's literally countless examples. We need to recognize that behind the cancel culture movement is something far more insidious. It's a targeted campaign to cancel Christianity and to crush Christians. And this effort isn't that novel, actually. There have been attempts to diminish or invalidate or eliminate Christianity's presence in, for example, America's public school sphere for at least 60 years. I've been alive since 1960. And since the 1960s, you've seen landmark decisions in America to prohibit Bible reading in schools, to prohibit teacher-led prayers in public schools, But even before cancel culture became a household term, there's been a concerted effort to separate Christianity from any form of government endorsement or government involvement. Deeming it to be the world's most followed religion, Christianity is able to be mistreated. There's all kinds of case examples that have exploded in the last 6 decades. Litigation to remove nativity scenes from courthouses or in front of some city hall. In God We Trust placards have been removed from public schools. The Ten Commands monuments from city halls and Ten Commands from the school boards and walls in the classrooms. Bibles have been removed from school libraries. These are just a few of the acid-laced lawsuit secularists like the Antichrist Lawsuit Union, the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. They have hurled all kinds of accusations and cases against people to remove crosses, to remove Ten Commands, to remove Bibles, to remove In God We Trust, to remove nativity scenes, anything that is a public demonstration of Christianity. They have gone to war to remove from the public square. At the same time, mind you, we had just recently a Statue to Satan set up in Iowa, I think, in the Capitol building. And the ACLU and so on were standing up for the right of them to have it there. And they opposed somebody, a private citizen, who came and dismantled it. You know, this was somehow against freedom of speech. Now, there's nothing in the American Constitution or any constitution I'm aware of that protects Satanism or Satan worship as some freedom that deserves to be protected. And yet these are the same people who cheered while they were pulling down monuments to national figures such as Christopher Columbus or George Washington or General Robert E. Lee or Stonewall Jackson. They cheered when the BLM riot mobs, cancel culture, Antifa thugs were pulling down national monuments. But somebody who put up a statue to Satan, they protect that and they attack and want to prosecute the person who damaged that monument to Satan. So you can see we've really moved into a bizarre situation of hypocrisy and double standards. But recently we've moved to a very new era of cancel culture or cancel Christianity movement. Now the proponents plainly want to maliciously inflict pain, suffering and punishment on anyone who displays the Christian faith, which can be as simple as a British Airways stewardess having a cross in her jewellery or on a necklace. Although it's okay to wear a Muslim headdress or a sheikh headdress, but for a Christian to have a cross necklace, that's unacceptable. And now they're going even further. If you try to display your Christian faith or fail to align yourself with the secularist critical race theory or LGBTQ plus views, you will get targeted. It's almost like in the early church when the Roman Empire demanded that they burn incense before an image to Caesar, or they'd be fed to the lions in the Colosseum or burned alive.
And how are these cancel culture campaigners managing to persecute Christians today?
Well, nowhere is this more evident than the surge of government bureaucracies and lawmakers thrashing people for failing to parrot, accept and affirm the homosexual transgender ideology. Both the US State Department and the Health and Human Services are requiring federal workers to choose their pronouns and words very clearly when addressing a transgender. You either speak fictional pronouns, you know, he, him, she, her and so on, or face reprimands or even dismissal. Not to be outdone, the federal government's Children's and Family Administration has now plans to prevent parents from fostering children unless they agree to use transgender pronouns and support what they call, euphemistically, gender-affirming care. Now, you know what they mean by gender-affirming care. It means mastectomies, castrations, genital mutilation, sterilization, you know, basically child abuse. And if you don't support gender-affirming care or mutilating kids, then you are a homophobic bigot who deserves to be jailed and you cannot foster a child or adopt a child. Many public school teachers are already facing these bizarre mandates, with some losing their jobs for refusing to lie by addressing students by fictional pronouns. I mean, imagine if a person walks and says, you know, I'm a cat or I'm a whale or a rhino or something, and you've got to just play act along with this, and you lose your job if you refuse to go along with their masquerade.
Well, this is all sounding very bizarre. So teachers are actually being required to lie.
Yes, and for a devout Christian, identifying people with a sex that is not their God-given sex, I mean, calling a boy a girl or calling a girl a boy, is equivalent to speaking falsehood. Because God clearly stated in the beginning in creation, in Genesis, he made them male and female. Male and female, he created them. And he looked and he said everything he made was good. So falsehood is the absence of truth and accuracy. And the Bible tells us to put it far from us. Ephesians 4:25, therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of the other. So to refer to a biological boy as a girl is a falsehood. And to punish Christians who refuse to do so is an effort to cancel Christianity. In fact, you could say it's an attempt to cancel reality.
And if the state is now requiring citizens to affirm falsehood and firing people for refusing to lie, what can we expect to come next?
Well, we can take a look at the state of Maine, which is set to pass a law allowing authorities to remove a child if their parents, not just adopted or foster parents, if their biological parents refuse to provide gender-affirming care. When you hear gender-affirming care, think genital mutilation, sterilization, mastectomies, castrations. And if you refuse to provide gender-affirming care for your confused kid who might be getting bullied at school to go through this procedure, and even the teachers encouraging them to, you can lose your child. They are threatening to take away children from the parents in Maine if you are not willing to subject your adolescent to dangerous drugs, puberty blocking and all this, and high-risk surgeries, castrations and mastectomies. If you refuse to allow them to transition to a preferred transgender sex, you can literally have your child taken away from you, confiscated. Imagine a state having that power. If this bill passes, parents will either have to cancel a Christian belief that God created the male and female or lose their child. I mean, it's an actual scenario. So that's the next step.
Yeah, I notice they're also using this terminology, gender-affirming care.
Well, it's like speaking about chemotherapy. There's nothing therapeutic about poisoning a person. Yeah, I mean, there's so many terms that they use, like they even called a vaccine when, you know, we called the clot shot or the Fauci ouchie. They've got nice terms. When they bomb cities, they call it saturation bombing. When they kill lots of civilians, it's called collateral damage. When they murder people, it's called terminating with extreme prejudice. They've got all these euphemisms, but let's face it, this is not gender-affirming care. It's gentle mutilation. It's child abuse.
Yeah. Is it only government officials and authorities who are advancing this radical and intolerant cancel culture agenda?
No, it's not just government authorities at all. The transgender ideology that's being used to cancel Christianity is also being used by big business. Take, for example, two flight attendants for Alaskan Airlines were recently fired because they questioned the company's endorsement of the so-called Equality Act, despite the company asking for employee comments. The Equality Act, so-called, is a congressional bill prohibiting employers and landlords from refusing to hire or offer housing to people based on their sexual preference or gender identity. So, you know, whereas you might have provided a house for a married couple, now you've got to provide it to a bunch of extremely immoral people just because who they're shacking up with happens to be of the same gender or something like that. And to think of this kind of so-called Equality Act, they also must make the hiring policies based on people's sexual preferences or gender identity. And the legislation is so vaguely worded that it's been pointed out that a 45-year-old man identifying as a young girl whose sexual preference is minors or pedophilia would be protected under the wording of this kind of bizarre bill. You know, for a long time, it was that child abuse was completely strength for Britain under here and I'm here, don't even think about it. You know, no society would tolerate that. And that's civilization. But right now you're going to be in deep trouble if you try to protect children from child abuse, because child abuse is now the agenda. And we can recite a lot of examples of workers outside government victimized by the cancel culture agenda by big business. I mean, take the case of Fran Itkoff. She's a 90-year-old woman, 90. She was fired for a job at the Multiple Sclerosis Society, where she had worked at this nonprofit for 6 years, when she failed to use the company-mandated transgender pronoun. And she said, I didn't even know what it meant. And it's understandable for somebody who's 90 years old, nine decades years old. No wonder she didn't understand all these preferred pronouns. I mean, she was brought up when a boy was a boy and a girl was a girl, and there's only two genders, and marriage can only be between a man and a woman. Still, she was fired from her job.
Yeah. So where's this all going? What is the impact going to be on the economy and the workplace and public life in general, Dr. Hammond?
Well, yes, if we look at the big picture, all of this is leading to the ultimate objective to cancel Christianity, to box Christians out of the workplace. You can call it a sleight of hand, you can call it smoke and mirrors, or just plain deviousness, but the goal of cancel culture enthusiasts is to force Christians out of everyday society. Now, legally, this cannot be achieved through a direct frontal assault against a person's Christian faith. The First Amendment in America, 1964 Civil Rights Act, prevents government and private industries from outright discrimination against any individual's religious beliefs. And most constitutions recognize religious freedom, freedom of conscience, freedom of expression.
So, in the light of constitutional guarantees of freedom and religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, how can these radical cancel culture activists manage to cancel Christianity?
Well, they've worked on a master key. The master key to cancel Christianity is the LGBTQ plus agenda. And so, to find that skeleton key, they've found it in, or they've created it through, the so-called LGBTQ plus ideology. So if a baker declines to create a cake, or design a cake with gay themes for wedding, they file a lawsuit against him, like poor Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cakes faced. Or if a clerk refused to officiate a same-sex marriage, they send him to jail, like Rowan County clerk Kim Davies, she experienced. If an author pens a book opposing homosexuality from a biblical standpoint, they terminate his employment, as the Atlanta fire chief Kevin Cochran endured. Likewise, if somebody refuses to sell flowers or provide a wedding venue or design a website for gay marriages or host them in their B&B effectively in their own home, expect legal action, fines, or mandatory sensitivity training classes or heavy lawsuits. All of these actions are significant steps for the cancel Christianity movement, but they needed to be quicker and more extensive to effectively eliminate what they perceive to be societal blight. Many Christians were slipping through the cracks, as most faith followers don't work in the government. They aren't necessarily chefs or clerks or authors or flowership owners or website designers. So a more encompassing strategy was needed, one with a net large enough to scoop up Christians from all walks of life, not just Bible-believing business owners. And this is where the Gay GB, I call them the Gay GB, entered, or others call it the Radical Rainbow Mafia. But just to explain my term, the Gay GB, the Soviet Union's secret police, the KGB, was a vicious persecutor of Christians who opposed communism. And millions of Christians were investigated, interrogated, tortured, imprisoned, and murdered for failing to comply with the political party orders of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. If they didn't pay homage to the dictator of the Soviet Union at the time, whether Lenin or Stalin, all kinds of things happened to them. 50 million Russians were sent to freeze or starve to death in the over 1,200 concentration camps in the Soviet Union, many of them in the Arctic hellholes of Siberia. The KGB also used active measures, disinformation, to discredit critics and undermine what they called enemies of the state. So today I look at the homosexual activist bullies, the KGB, as the rising KGB of the West. This is a force of radical homosexuals and transgender activists whose aim is to include desensitizing, intimidating, silencing, and prosecuting Christians for their beliefs on marriage and morality. If you say something as outrageous as there's only two genders or marriage can only be between a man and a woman, you can be in trouble. People have been prosecuted. Professors have lost their positions. Jordan Peterson effectively was kicked out of university in Canada for refusing to use the gender pronouns of these new bullies, the new Gay GB. So we've had all kinds of cases in South Africa already, such as a case brought against the Dutch Reformed Church over wanting to be able to have gay members in the ministry and even running the Sunday schools. And we've had freedom of speech under attack at UCT. We had a deputy chairman of the Student Representative Council, Zipu Pei, or Zizi, who was attacked because she sent out a post on a Facebook page saying, "God forgive us, we are institutionalizing and normalizing sin." And the backlash to her brief private post on social media went beyond irrational. The homosexual activists at UCT launched a vicious tirade of hate and intimidation against her that defies description. Ironically, the attackers demanded tolerance, not that they were expressing any tolerance. Homosexual pornography of the most depraved anti-Christian sort and blasphemy was posted on a Facebook page. She is threatened, insulted, vilified in the most despicable ways. Her office, her Student Representative Council office, was trashed. Scriptures were ripped off her wall, and semi-naked homosexual activists photographed themselves in her office in lewd poses. And despite this awful abuse and intimidation of Tizzy, the UCT management repeatedly publicly expressed their commitment in support of the LGBTQ activist and did not at any point take her side or protect her from all of this kind of harassment and appalling criminal acts against her. And she got suspended for her biblical convictions. And that's just one example. Then you've got the double standards in UCT, University of Cape Town, where that appalling blasphemy published in the 2009 Sex Appeal charity magazine. But when challenged, the students responsible for this blasphemous outrage appealed to free speech protections in the Constitution. Now, just to show the hypocrisy, when a Christian student at UCT expressed her biblical beliefs on a personal Facebook page, that was not worthy of free speech protection. In fact, she is threatened with expulsion. She was suspended. But homosexual students, transgender students, and any others can express their thoughts and opinions as long as it's anti-Christian. If a Christian presents their opinion, that is not under protection of freedom of speech. And it was nothing less than a kangaroo court. Zizi was suspended, even though she'd been super popular. Over 4,000 students had voted for her to be Student Representative Council Deputy Chairman. But that's the kind of prejudice you can see there. And it's quite clear there's all kinds of meetings where Christians have tried to make a stand and they get ruled, no, that's not allowed on university campus. But if you want to come up with the most perverse stuff, that's fine. As long as it's anti-Christian, freedom of speech applies. If it is Christian, freedom of speech does not apply. Then you get guest house owners targeted. In Belleville Equality Court, we had Christian guest house people. They had the House of Bread guest house in Wolseley, Western Cape, hauled before the Equality Court for refusing to host a gay couple in their home. Now, it turned out that they'd been very friendly and polite, but they'd just point out that it was against their policies and this gay couple were welcome to go to. And they mentioned several other bed and breakfasts in the area, some of them just down the street. But no, this gay couple wanted to stay in their B&B. Now, they had scriptures that House of Bread was obviously a Christian guest house, scripture on the wall and so on, but they wanted to go to them. And in fact, the civil magistrate pointed out that, you know, really you should resolve this without coming to court. You should be able to talk to these people directly and resolve this amongst yourselves. This isn't the sort of thing to bring into the court. And this is a matter of free enterprise. You want to support a place, you support them. If they don't want your business, you can avoid supporting them. But you don't have the right to go and take somebody to court just because they are using right of admission reserved. And but anyway, that could have been much worse if it had gone against them in a court. And there have been all kinds of other cases, such as the Christian Arts Training Center in Bloemfontein, found guilty of human rights violations for discriminating against homosexuals. Now, it turned out that they had they provided counseling for people who wanted to break free of the gay lifestyle. And that was considered discriminatory. I mean, even though the people asked for this. And so this whole Christian, it was called Career Training Center, had to amend their constitution to accommodate this so-called diversity. And they had to attend sensitivity workshops conducted by the Institute for Social Justice and Reconciliation in collaboration with Southern Council of Churches. And there was all kinds of nonsense when the Department of Justice ordered the SA Human Rights Council to investigate alleged anti-homosexual discrimination at the center, because apparently they had counselling to cure gay students, of course, one to came, they're saying we want to break free of this. And before you know it, they had all kinds of harassment from the state. And then there was a church ordered to pay an 87,000 rand fine for firing a gay music teacher. That was Dutch Reformed Church, Marietta Park. And this is a man who was unrepentant in his sexual orientation, and they believed he had set a bad example for students by being involved in a gay relationship. And the judge said that's not part of his job description to be a role model of Christianity. Now, he's the music teacher. The church was ordered to apologize to Stratum and to pay 87,000 rand to compensate for his loss of dignity and income. And then you have, in America, a man, Neil Clark Warren, who founded a popular Christian dating site, eHarmony. And he was sued by a homosexual man because the Christian website didn't provide for homosexual dating. And he has ordered to create a dating site for homosexuals. And if he refused, he would be expelled from New Jersey and not allowed to operate in the state at all. Sadly, the company gave in to this pressure and launched a separate homosexual dating site. And then you've got all kinds of horrific persecution. There was Aaron and Melissa Klein, Christian owners of Sweet Cakes in Oregon, in America, and they were fined $135,000 for compensatory damages for emotional, mental, and physical suffering because they refused to design a cake for a lesbian wedding. Now, they were slapped with a gag order prohibiting them from speaking publicly about their refusal to participate in or design same-sex wedding cakes. Now, they were willing to sell cakes to these people, and they did. What they refused to do was design a homosexual-themed cake for a lesbian wedding. And that's, of course, part of their creativity, and it was against their conviction. They appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court, who then refused to consider their case at all. And now they're going to the High Court, to the Supreme Court in America, but the state Supreme Court refused it. And there's all kinds of harassments like that. A New Mexico Supreme Court ruled that two Christian photographers, Elaine and Jonathan Hugan, who declined to provide their photographic services for a homosexual wedding, violated the state's Human Rights Act. And there's a florist, Baronella Strosman, who was prosecuted for refusing to provide flowers designed for a homosexual wedding. And she has served and sold flowers to many people who identify as homosexual, but what she wasn't willing to do is to design specific bouquets with a homosexual theme or lesbian theme. And she said, little by little, they're stripping us of any thought we might have, of any difference of opinion. This is our religious freedom at stake. And same thing with a different people like in Iowa, Mennonite Christian owners of an art gallery and a restaurant were prosecuted for refusing to provide their venue, which is located in a former church building, for a so-called homosexual wedding. And there's pro-life groups that have been labeled hate groups. In fact, soldiers on active service in Mississippi were informed that the American Family Association, pro-lifers and Focus on the Family are domestic hate groups. Absolutely bizarre. And that's not the only examples either. There's in Ireland, we had Ashes Baking Company lost their appeal and were prosecuted for refusing to design homosexual wedding cakes. And you know, this family business were basically put out of business by the radical homosexual activists. So plainly, what we are dealing with right here is an all-encompassing net which scoops up Christians from all walks of life. And the Gay GB and the Pink Inquisition is an extreme Marxist extension of the homosexual activist movement. Even some hardline homosexual transgender proponents criticize this extreme position and these tactics. So, for example, transgender activist and Olympic gold medalist Caitlyn Jenner described them, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the radical rainbow mafia are domestic terrorists. And Jenner's use of the word terrorists against his fellow homosexuals is not an exaggeration because they're aiming to instill terror as an accelerator for this communist cancel Christianity arsenal. So imagine a fear a parent might experience when faced with the possibility of losing their job or their custody for their child for not using the specific pronouns that are not even accurate or honest in describing what a person is, calling a boy a girl or a girl a boy, and for not accepting gender-affirming care, which is nothing more than mutilation and a butchery called surgery. The decision becomes clear. Either these parents must renounce what God says or risk being cancelled and forced to find alternative means to make their car payments, their house payments, pay for health insurance, maintain their essential utilities like water and electricity and so on, and to support their kids. That's assuming the state even lets them keep those kids. So for the radical rainbow mafia, Pink Inquisition, Gay GB, it's a win-win. Either the Christian surrenders to intimidation and becomes a cowardly parrot for secularist views, or he gets cancelled.
So how are Christians targeted in the workplace?
Well, consider the two flight attendants who were terminated by Alaskan Airlines. Alaskan Airlines went on a fishing expedition to hunt down Christians that needed to be cancelled from their employment. First, the airline announced that they supported the passage of the Equality Act. Then they feigned interest in what the employees think about the decision and requested the input, knowing full well that all devout Christians who believe that homosexuality is sin will voice their opposition. So Alaskan Airlines is the most gay-friendly carrier flying the skies, boasting of having the nation's sole pride plane. They've got an aircraft decorated with rainbow colors with the words "Fly with Pride." Now, bearing in mind that pride is one of the seven deadly sins, and the Bible says God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble, and pride comes before a fall, the Christian company attendants, O'Malley, Brown, and Lacey Smith, posted comments questioning the company's support of the Equality Act, and Brown asked, will the Equality Act be used to suppress religious freedom? And Lacey Smith asked whether the act would regulate morality. They both then investigated and then terminated. So they weren't just terminated, they were humiliated on their way out the door. A union representative commented, can we please, all capitals, get someone to shut down the comments or put Marley and Lacey in a burlap bag and drop them in a well? I mean, that's basically saying kill them. Other union representatives called them bigots and pukes, which is the same thing as calling them vomit. The union president said about Lacey, I hate her, and that's apparently not hate speech, though. Imagine the fear and intimidation for other Bible believers at Alaskan Airlines. What must they feel if they dare to speak out against the company's support for the Equality Act or their pro-gay LGBTQ sponsorships? So, you know, they ask, what's your opinion? And then they hammer you for giving an opinion that they don't like. Silencing Christians and removing them from their jobs and depriving them of custody of their children is cancel culture's method of putting Christians into the closet, out of the public eye, effectively banishing Christians and influence over the public policy. Both human health services in America and the State Department policy threatens to fire people for refusing to use the transgender pronouns, with more federal governments sure to jump on board. Now, it's undoubtedly designed to get rid of Christians out of the federal government, anyone with sincerely held religious belief. Same time as when they were saying, you must get the jab, you've got to get this Fauci, Archie clot shot, or you're not allowed to work in the government, the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and so on. And they were basically getting Christians out, people who think for themselves and say, no, I'm not going to bow before Caesar, I'm not going to burn incense in front of Caesar, I'm not going to mouth these shibboleths, whether it's Caesar's Lord or he, him, she, her, or whatever it is. And so it would be infantile to think that the policy will stop with mandated transgender pronouns. I mean, how long before the federal employees are required to refer to a mother as birthing people or females as people who bleed? I mean, these are really terms they're trying to do this. You can't talk about a parent, even. You're not allowed to speak about a father or mother, things like this. And they're basically trying to cancel women as well and cancel men too while you're about it. So getting Christians out of the federal workforce might be their goal, but the radical rainbow mafia sees the possibility. And why shouldn't they? If they can mandate pronoun use, there's a whole host of mandated options that Christians could find offensive, such as the military forcing soldiers to shower and bunk with servicemen of the opposite sex. And as reported by the Wall Street Journal, if a U.S. Army servicewoman expresses discomfort about showering with a female so-called who's got male genitalia, what's the brass reply? Talk to your commanding officer, but toughen up. I mean, basically, they threaten people in the U.S. Army, if you'd oppose these policies, and, you know, get out. And as for the masquerade madness, lockdown lunacy, and salvation by vaccination COVID cult, the objective is give Christians the boot, force them to resign, or at least give them second thoughts about applying for the job in the first place.
But what about the next up-and-coming generation of children and their deeply held religious beliefs?
Yes, the cancel Christianity movement believes it's imperative to erase parents. Parents who want to educate their children in biblical beliefs that run counter to the secularist anti-God views must be cancelled. So this requires putting children through classroom instruction that defies biblical teaching. And parents will have to get out of the way because moms and dads typically disciple their children and bring them up in the faith. And parents are generally considered to be too conservative or too Christian. So we're seeing this in a bunch of public policies and laws that will punish parents who insist on presenting biblical standards to their children. And a good example of this is the developing case in the state of Washington, where Olympia School District is mandating Pride class celebrations for children as young as five, preschool even. Though not the only school district in the nation to offer gay pride celebrations, what makes these people in Olympia School District so different is that they've threatened to put parents in jail if the parents refuse to allow their children to attend these gay pride classes. I've heard of schools in South Africa even requiring all the boys to wear girls' clothes and high heels for the next week, and all the girls to wear boys' clothes for the next week, and literally not only requiring them to do so, but requiring them to pay for not having to wear a school uniform. Now, it's not a choice. Some schools have had this policy: if you want to wear civilian clothes, civvies, not school uniform on Friday, you bring some money to pay for that, and that's a fundraiser. But that's not that's a choice. This is not a choice. This is where it said you must, and you must pay as well. Pay for doing what you don't want to do. And to put Christian parents in jail for refusing to allow their children to be forcibly indoctrinated into perversity is just another missile in a cancel culture's quiver to vaporize biblical truths. Laws are not even necessary to remove a child from the parents holding religious beliefs against preferred pronouns. Christian parents Mary and Jeremy Cox of Indiana had their son snatched by state authorities after they refused to affirm their child's new female pronoun and name change. The distraught parents sought the help of the state, but to no avail. They lost the case before a trial judge and an appellate court. Their son was placed in a gender-affirming home, even though the trial judge said the Coxes were otherwise fit parents. But they appealed the case to the US Supreme Court. Imagine that the children were taken away just because they didn't support the child playing this game of saying, I'm another gender. The cancel Christianity movement has many multifaceted weapons to instill terror into Christians, to silence them, and to cancel any influence they might want to exercise in private and government businesses.
With so much negative emotion and the incendiary comments, isn't there a danger that this could spill over into actual violence, Dr. Hammond?
Indeed it has. And I'm just thinking, I was in Colorado shortly after a terrorist shot up Family Research Council. It was back in 2012, a homosexual activist walked into the Family Research Council headquarters in Washington, said, I don't like your politics, and opened fire on a security guard. And despite being shot in the arm, the guard managed to wrestle a gun away from him. And the 28-year-old terrorist, Floyd Lee Corkins, said in a videotaped confession, he hoped the trustee would make a statement against people who are working in their stance against gay rights. And there have been other cases. There's the Covenant School last year in Nashville, Tennessee, 2023. 3 9-year-old children were killed and 3 adults were murdered by a transgender terrorist. It was a girl pretending to be a man who shot up the school. And do you know, the media outlets like CNN and so on later apologized for calling transgender terrorist a she and using gender. You know, it spoke about this transgender boy who was a biological woman, and at some point they used the word she. Now, instead of apologizing to the people who were murdered, they apologized to the memory of the murderer who had committed suicide, by the way, and wasn't even around to take offense, but still. So that was 2023, Nashville, Tennessee. 3 9-year-old children murdered, 3 adults murdered. And in 2024, Lakewood Church, there was a shooting at Pastor Joel Osteen's Texas church that saw a 12-minute gun battle where a transgender shot a 57-year-old man and a 7-year-old who was in critical condition. So by instilling terror and self-censorship in believers who maintain biblical views, the cancel Christianity movement is casting a wider net that can intimidate Christians into silence and intimidate Christians to maintaining a weaker conviction and to effectively make them powerless in the public square. At the same time, the radicals can retain their bloodthirsty focus of targeting the more courageous and devoted members of the faith with more direct action, those who are consistent and say outrageous things like, well, there's only 2 genders and marriage can only be between a man and a woman, and biologically there's only 2 genders and things like that. And they can target those who are refusing to bow the knee. And Jesus spoke of the coming harvest day when the wicked will be weeded out of his kingdom. You read about that in Matthew 13. But before that day of judgment comes, Satan is doing his own weeding. Satan is seeking to get the righteous out of his kingdom, out of Satan's kingdom. So our response must be, crush Satan under our feet, and the God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet, we read.
Dr. Hammond, is there any further information you'd like to provide, resources that are available for the listeners?
Yes, we actually wrote about this. The title of the book is The Rise of the Gay GB and the Pink Inquisition. And this is actually an expansion of the original book, The Pink Agenda, The Ruin of the Family. And that book later needed to be reprinted, and we expanded, including the details about the transgender, KGB and Pink Inquisition, persecuting Christians and bakers and so on. So there's a lot of interesting information. We also added chapters on the gay mafia behind the sex abuse crisis in Roman Catholicism. So this is available from Christian Liberty Books, christianlibertybooks.co.za, The Rise of the KGB and the Pink Inquisition. That's got a lot of details. You can also find more on the christianaction.org.za website, which has tackled quite a few of these issues. We need to be alert. We need to understand our faith. We need to know what the scriptures teach. And we must be courageous. We must submit to God. We must resist the devil, and he will flee from us.
Thank you, Dr. Hammond, for informing us and raising our awareness of this important matter. Thank you very much for joining us for From the Frontline. God bless and good night.